Welcome to the Woodridge Baptist Church Podcast. For more information about what's happening in the life of our church, visit our website at www.woodridge.org. Enjoy the podcast.
We're going to go to Matthew chapter 13. We're shifting gears. We talked about Solomon for a while, right? Now I'm shifting gears. I wanted to take a look at the parables of Jesus. Jesus, the greatest teacher of all time. I'm sorry that you're stuck with me. Jesus, the greatest teacher of all time. And you think about his approach with people. You know, in his time, there was a thing called the Old Testament. I mean, that was around. You know, Jesus goes into the temple and he reads from it. But when you see his approach with people, a lot of times he's like out in a crowd. It'll say this great crowd was following Jesus, right? And then, of course, what you know is he's going to walk, and he's going to stop, and he's going to teach. And when he taught his approach, he didn't necessarily just open up the Old Testament, did he? I mean, he could have opened it up, and he could have said, today I'm going to be reading from Isaiah. And then he could have read from Isaiah, and he said, now I'm going to have to unpack what this Hebrew word means today. I don't know that he had to do that back then, you know, but whatever. We have to do that now. So he could have said something like that, but you know what he usually does? He usually gets the crowd up and he's like, okay, so there was a farmer, and then he tells a story, right? And why does he do something like that? I mean, why doesn't he just open up the Bible that he had available like he did on more than one occasion? Why does he often start with stories? And the answer is because Jesus was trying to communicate a truth to his audience in a way that was going to connect to his audience so that they could then connect to him and know him. That's why Jesus was doing it. Now, when we look at Matthew chapter 13, think about the way that this begins. I'm going to start in verse 1, and you'll see a little bit of his approach. It says, on that day, Jesus went out of the house, was sitting by the sea. Such large crowds gathered around him that he got into a boat and sat down while the whole crowd stood on the shore. Jesus wasn't a people person. That's why he did that. I'm kidding. So he goes out onto a boat because it would actually project his voice. That's why. So then he told them many things in parables, saying, consider the sower who went out to sow. And as he sowed, some seed fell along the path, and the birds came and devoured them. Other seed fell on rocky ground where it didn't have much soil, and it grew up quickly since the soil wasn't deep. But when the sun came up, it was scorched, and since it had no root, it withered away. Other seed fell among the thorns, and the thorns came up and choked it. Still, other seed fell on good ground and produced fruit, some 100, some 60, some 30 times what was sown. Let anyone who has ears listen. And then the disciples came up. By the way, love the disciples. Jesus is here with this teaching moment, and the disciples came up, and they asked him, why are you speaking to them in parables? You know, talk about a momentum killer right there, right? What's your contribution to what's happening today, disciples? Well, I'm questioning what you're doing, master, right? Now, Jesus actually does give them an answer, and the answer that he gives them, you see in verse 11, and he answers them patiently, no doubt, because the secrets of the kingdom of heaven have been given for you to know, but it hasn't been given to them. So guys, you've figured some of this stuff out. They have not. They have not. So why am I talking to them this way? It's because I want them to know. That's why. It's not because he looks at people and says, you know, disciples, come over here. Really what I'm dealing with today, these aren't that smart of people, but you are, right? And the reason that we know that is because half the times Jesus tells a parable, he's having to say, hey guys, disciples, come over here. Now let me tell you what the parable means, right? So that's what he's dealing with. But it shows us something very important about why Jesus would communicate this way. And it's the first, before we even get into the parable, I want to talk about why he talks about parables. And this is the first point, is because insights from God come from God. Insights from God come from God. Now, think about it. If I want to know what's going on in my wife's heart, you know what I need to do? I actually need to be quiet and I need to listen to my wife. Isn't that right, wives? I do. I need to be quiet and I need to listen to her. The only way that I can actually get into what is going on in the mind of my wife is to listen to my wife. Did you know that it's actually not really any different when it goes on, what's going on in the mind of God? Sometimes I need to be quiet and I just need to listen to God. Insights into God come from God. Now there's a thing called the confirmation bias. Have you ever heard of this? The confirmation bias is a real thing. The idea behind the confirmation bias is this. In argumentation, Confirmation bias is the tendency to accept evidence that confirms our beliefs, and we reject evidence that contradicts our beliefs. Here's the idea behind confirmation bias. Something sounds true to us because it connects with what you want to believe, or you're already disposed to believe. Here's the thing. We all do it. I do it. You do it. People that aren't here this morning, they do it. You see this, for example, in politics, when people will only listen to specific voices. You know what I'm talking about? And they completely drown out anybody that disagrees. And this happens, by the way, on, you guessed it, both sides, right? There's only certain people that I'm willing to listen to, and I'm going to silence everybody else. This doesn't just happen in politics. Did you know this also happens with regard with what people are willing to believe about God? We tend to listen to people that we agree with, and then we tend to mute those that we don't agree with. And why is that? Is because we are biased a certain way to the point that we're unwilling to listen, the confirmation bias. So what you see in Scripture, it's really kind of interesting. Jesus takes a little bit of a different approach, right? With parables, what he's kind of doing is he's taking a little bit less of a straightforward approach, because if a straightforward one were given, people would likely become dismissive and even defensive. Do you remember when David didn't just commit kind of your run-of-the-mill sins, right? I mean, he committed some big ones. And you remember when David had done that, in 2 Samuel chapter 12, there was this prophet of God. It says that he was sent by God. It's a guy named Nathan. Nathan comes up to David, and he tells a story. You know, he doesn't walk up and say, King David, could you sit down for just a second? I think we need to have heart-to-heart about the fact that you committed adultery and murder. That wasn't his approach. Instead, he comes and he sits down with David in 2 Samuel 12. He sits down with him and he says, hey, I need to tell you something. So there's a guy, right? There's this guy that's really rich, got a lot of stuff. And, you know, we're a hospitable kind of crowd. And so when a guest comes in, what we do is a part of our culture is we welcome these people in. We often take something of our own flock and then we offer a meal from our own flock for them just as a part of hospitality. However, this rich guy, there was also a poor guy, and all he had was this one little lamb. That's it. And this lamb had become a part of the family. I mean, he really kind of beefs it up, you know? He kind of ties you in emotionally. And here he is talking to David. He says he has this one little lamb. And the rich guy just could not see fit to take something that was already his own so that he could demonstrate hospitality to his guest. Do you know what he did? He actually went and took the little lamb from this poor guy and offered that instead. What do you think about that, David? And you know how David responded. David was like, this guy needs to die. At least he needs to provide four lambs back, right? Something like that. Now Nathan responds then. He gets David's real thoughts. And what he does then is he says, but you're the guy. You're the one. I mean, Uriah isn't with us anymore because of you. Bathsheba isn't with her husband anymore because of you. You're the man. And that's when David probably sits there and he goes, you know, I don't think this guy deserves to die on second thought. I like him a lot. No, I'm just kidding. That's not how David responded. But did you see Nathan's approach? Nathan didn't take the straightforward approach when he went before David. He just says, hey, we need to talk. There's a situation here. And he got what was really going on in his heart. And David lets it out. And when Nathan says, hey, you're the man, guess what David does? Oh my gosh. I mean, oh my gosh. One of the reasons that Jesus takes this approach with parables is because this is what sin can do. What it did to David is exactly what it can do to me and you. Sin can blind you. It can blind you. We can be so caught up in our own rationalizations for what we're doing, we can't see it anymore. And what confirmation bias would show is we're willing to listen to those voices that we want to agree with, that we feel justified with, and we tend to mute those, and we want them to be quiet that those are disagreeing with us. And Jesus says, I'm going to take a little bit of a different approach so that maybe you can hear me. Maybe you can hear me. Blaise Pascal, one of the great thinkers, Albert Einstein said, maybe the most brilliant mind to ever live. Pascal, by the way, it was said of his father was Etienne. Etienne really raised him. His mother died when he was young. And Etienne said of Pascal, it was said of Pascal, he was teaching him from home. He was a homeschooler, right? But he had not started teaching him math yet. And he comes home from work one day. Etienne comes home from work one day, and he sees Blaise like drawing in the dirt over there. And when he looks up, he sees that Blaise is figuring out like Euclidean geometry on his own out in the dirt in the backyard. He's got smart. But Pascal dies when he's about 39 years old. He had had a religious experience. He had gone to a way of life where he'd walked away from God. And then he has this religious experience of God. And one of the things that he said as a result, he says, in faith, there's enough light for those who want to believe and enough shadows to blind those who don't. In faith, there's enough light for those who want to believe and enough shadows to blind those who don't. What we keep asking for, when you think about it, what we keep asking for from God is just a little bit more. Just a little bit more. I mean, I'll believe in you if you give me a little bit more evidence. I'll believe in you if you, by the way, remove this situation from my life. I'll believe in you if. And we start to stipulate the conditions that God has to work and reveal himself in order for us to believe. Here's the thing, though. And specifically, if you look in verse 12 of chapter 13, that isn't the way that God works. It might be the way that we work. It isn't the way that God works. In verse 12, it says, for whoever has, more will be given to him, and he will have more than enough. But whoever does not have, even what he has, will be taken away from him. And this leads to the second point. What we do with the truth determines whether or not God gives us more insight into the truth. What we do with what God has already revealed to us determines what God is going to do and how much he gives us. If we're constantly saying, you know, you're just not giving enough here. Not enough. Here's a miracle. Bang. Yeah, I mean, that's cool. It's just not enough. Well, when's it enough? I mean, when do you get to a place where there's a satisfying answer? Or here's a different question I want to ask you this morning. Would you actually ever be satisfied with anything that God says? Ever? Either from his word or even through a miracle, would you ever be satisfied? We see this in Luke chapter 16, right? You have the rich man and Lazarus. And there's a really interesting verse in that story, right? Because you have someone separated from God. They're in Hades, right? You have Lazarus. By the way, the poor guy's name, the rich guy isn't. You know, and he's up there in the bosom of Abraham, it says. And then you got the rich guy that's sitting there suffering. But there's this key point, right, where he realizes a chasm has been fixed. He doesn't have any more choices. He's made his bed, so to speak. And then he says, okay, could you please send a messenger to my brothers so that what's happening to me doesn't happen to them? And here was the answer. They have Moses, the law, and the prophets. They don't need more. They have enough. Why are you asking for more? What we do with the truth determines whether or not God will give us more insight into the truth. Here's the idea. We have to learn to be faithful with what God has already entrusted to us. We have to be faithful with that and quit assuming that the more that we don't have yet is the key. And had I just had that, see, and now God's on the hook for this. And Jesus is saying, no, it really doesn't work like that. It works a different way. And here's why. This is number three. It's because knowing God is as much about our heart as it is about our mind. Knowing about God is as much about our heart as it is about our mind. Bottom line, we cannot see what we do not want to see. We can't see it. We don't want to see it. It could be right here. Did you know that let's go back to Wendy. You know, I could say the only way that I know what's going on in the heart of my wife is for me to be quiet and to listen to her. And I could be quiet and listen to her. And when she's done, she pours her heart out. And then I could look at her and say, you know, I mean, that is a possible response. I'm not endorsing it, by the way. That is a possible response that I could have with her. You know, because here's the thing, she could say, there's just some ways that you're not reaching me. There's some ways that, we don't have these conversations, by the way. Marriage is good, all right? I mean, it's just an example. She could say, there are ways that you're not connecting with me. You're not listening to me. And my response could be something like, well, I just don't know how to please you. I don't know how to satisfy you. I don't know what you're looking for. By the way, in spite of the fact that she just told me what she's looking for, I could be, hopefully I'm not, I could be the kind of husband that even if my wife is telling me what she needs from me, I don't see it because I don't want to. It might actually demand too much from me. In other words, I can't just do the same old that I'm comfortable with, that I actually have to realize my wife changes over time. And the way that I have to meet her where she's at might actually be different now with four kids in the house and stuff and crazy schedules. Did you know that the same is true about your relationship with God? Did you know? You cannot see what you do not want to see. You will not hear what you do not want to hear. Norman Geisler gave this example a long time ago, and I thought that it was a keeper. He said, the same sun that hardens clay melts wax. The same sun that hardens clay melts wax. The difference in the effect is what the sun is shining on, not on the sun itself. The question is which are you? It's not, is the sun shining? The sun is shining. And because of this reality, by the way, that's why Jesus sometimes spoke in parables. It wasn't always, but he sometimes spoke in parables. And so you catch what he says, like in verse 18. Listen to the parable of the sower. When anyone hears the word about the kingdom that doesn't understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what was sown in his heart. This is the one sown along the path. This is who Jesus is describing. Everybody here has a heart. Everybody's heart has a condition. And Jesus says one condition is your heart is hard. Your heart is just hard. Here's the idea. It's like trying to grow corn on concrete. And it just isn't going to happen. It isn't going to happen. It's not that the seeds aren't thrown. It's just thrown on a place that isn't going to receive it at all. These are people that are unconcerned with God or anything spiritual at all. These are the people that don't give Jesus the least consideration because they've already made up their mind. And of course, Jesus doesn't even make sense to these people because the mind they've already made up and the mind of Jesus don't match. Of course he sounds foolish to them because the mind that they've already made up doesn't match what Jesus is saying. It makes no sense. Of course it doesn't. This is why Pascal, who I mentioned before, said this. He said, human beings must be known to be loved, but divine beings must be loved to be known. Human beings must be known to be loved, but divine beings must be loved to be known. And why would he say that? Is because the primary problem here isn't that there's a lack of what God has demonstrated in his creation. It's that we don't want to see God in what he's demonstrated in his creation. Paul says this in the book of Romans. We suppress the truth that is in us. That's the heart. That is not the mind. And what is going on here can affect what we're willing to accept here. And since the seed doesn't get into the ground, guess what? Just sits on the top. It just sits on the top, and the birds come by and they have some snacks. That's the hard heart. Now, this morning, I'm going to ask a very simple question. I'm going to ask it now, and I'm going to ask it at the end. Which heart is yours? Which one is yours? Let's take a look at the second one. You see it in verse 20. There's the one sown on rocky ground. This is the one who hears the word, immediately receives it with joy, but he has no root, and it's short-lived. When distress or persecution comes because of the word, immediately he falls away. This is usually described as the shallow heart. The shallow heart. Did you notice? It's like you go to church, you go to camp, you go to DNOW weekend, you go to something, you hear the gospel, and it's like, I'll take it. That's the response. And you got it pretty fast. And then persecution comes, it's like, I'm out. Now, of course, Jesus says this throughout. In this world, you'll have trouble. In this, it's saying you have trouble because of the word, not because you're a difficult person, right? Or you just have a hard personality. It's you're persecuted because of your faithfulness to Jesus. Notice the initial response to the gospel. No resistance is offered. It's like, I'll take it. This is the opposite of the hard heart. I'll take it. Strong emotional reaction. Shallow acceptance of Jesus. Holds on to the blessings, ignores the costs of following him. The people hear the message, they're moved by it, but the decision they make doesn't last long. Ravi Zacharias, I don't know if you've ever heard of him. Ravi Zacharias speaks around the world and has done so for decades. He was making an observation once. He was speaking over, I think in the UK, if I remember right, but he was speaking over there, and there a storm had blown through, and trees had just fallen over by the droves, and he said, my gosh, I mean, what happened here, right? And as he was talking with people, they said, well, here's the thing. We have such an abundance of rain where we're at that the roots of the trees don't actually have to go very deep. So the roots are really shallow. So on the occasion with we have these strong straight line winds blow through, a lot of times what you'll see is that tree just gets ripped right out of the ground. And so with him, he says this, you know, a strong wind comes and over they go because there wasn't anything there that was holding them in the depth of what they should have taken as they claimed Jesus to begin with. That's a second heart. It's shallow. This is the idea that I want salvation, I just don't want the difficulties that might come with it. But there's still a third heart. Here's my guess. This might be more people in this room than the other two. It's a total guess, but I'm going to throw it out there. In verse 22, it says, the seed falling among the thorns refers to someone who hears the word, but the worries of his life and the deceitfulness of wealth choke the word and make it unfruitful. This is often called the crowded heart. There is just too much busyness going on inside of you for you to seriously consider Jesus and what it means to follow him, the crowded heart. This is the person who hears the word, they believe it, they let other things in life absolutely choke it out. Specifically, Jesus says the worries of life and the deceitfulness of wealth. Remember, he gives this warning. I mean, what good is it for you to gain the whole world and to lose your soul? He gives this warning. But the worries of this life, that list can be enormous. You're genuinely interested. You hear the word, you're genuinely interested. But then you get home. You get home. And you have money to earn. You have the mortgage on the second home has created some stress. You got four kids that are in club ball. And so you're traveling all the time. I'm just making some stuff up right now, right? You get back to the routine. And what was going on in here and what was stirring in here, life chokes it out. And by the time you're done making decisions about everything else in life, you look and you go, my gosh, I don't have time. I don't have time for Jesus. I just don't have it. It is not there. Or at least that's the choice that you think you have. Really what it is that's just the choice that we're making. That's the crowded heart. It's not that the crowded heart is outright rejecting Jesus, by the way. It's just too busy for him. Again, you're not rejecting Jesus, you're just neglecting him. But there's a fourth heart, by the way. It's not all bad, right? In verse 23, but the seed falling on good soil refers to someone who hears the word, understands it. This is the one who produces a crop yielding 100, 60, or 30 times what was sown. That's the prepared heart. That's the ready heart. You know, I give this example of the ready heart, and some of you are going to walk out and say, you know, Jeremy's right. I need to change my diet. That's fine. I mean, if you need to, knock yourself out. The ready heart. The reason that I give this image is because this is a heart that you can tell is following Jesus because of the fruit that is produced from it. That's the ready heart. When the word goes deep, it produces incredible fruit. Hear what I'm telling you. When Jesus goes deep in you, he produces incredible change and incredible fruit in you. It shows up in how you treat people. It shows up in your willingness to forgive people when they make mistakes, by the way, like you do. It shows up in your willingness to forgive people. It shows up in your desire for more of him because what you've tasted and seen is good. In other words, when you've really and deeply experienced Jesus, it is noticeable, not just to you, but people around you. If Jesus has really taken root in you, they will see it. But I also want you to notice that Jesus even makes some differences in the parable. Did you catch it? What's the return on the fruit here? Well, for some it's 30 times, some it's 60 times, sometimes it's 100 times what is sown. It's going to vary from person to person by the investment, person to person. Even Jesus is making this distinction. Some people will grow more, therefore be impacted more by Jesus, therefore produce more fruit for Jesus. A friend of mine reached out to me. This had to have been something like a month ago. A guy that I've known in North Carolina for my years up there. And he reached out and he says, man, you're not going to believe this. For 27 years, I have prayed that my dad would find Jesus. My dad just found Jesus. He didn't quit. My friend would not quit because he saw the prayer and the investment was worth it and his dad. By the way, family, that can be one of the toughest ones when you think about it. 27 years, I've prayed that God would change his heart and that he would find Jesus. He has found him. Here's another one. When we were in New Orleans, there was a guy named Mike. Now, just so you know, Mike had a little bit of a checkered background. We found Mike literally on Bourbon Street in New Orleans. Mike was completely crashed out. He not only had a drug issue, he had an alcohol issue. And I don't mean a little bit of an issue. I mean, it was hardcore. So we work, we get Mike off the street. He goes into a place called Bethel Colony. Pastor Mel, awesome guy who leads the ministry there. Love that guy. Next thing that you see, and Mike ends up coming to the church that I'm on staff at. And you look at him, this guy, he comes and sits down, his head is shaved. He's got tattoos all the way up his back, around his head like this. And he comes and sits down, right? And he sits there and thinks, how are the people going to respond to Mike that's coming into the church? They responded exactly the way that the church should have. They welcomed him. They were thrilled to see him, ultimately because they wanted Mike to know Jesus. Well, here's the thing. Fast forward a little bit. Mike doesn't just know Jesus. He does. Mike is ministering to people now in Houma, Louisiana. Houma. Talk about a journey from Bourbon Street to Houma. That's a book, right? When you think about it, Mike, drug addict, alcoholic, lives on Bourbon Street, completely different life. Why? Because of the condition of his heart and his willingness to receive what Jesus was trying to put in it. Peter Kraft. Peter Kraft, longtime philosopher up in Boston. I love this guy's stuff. And I remember running across this quote. He has a book, just a phenomenal book, Christianity for Modern Pagans. It's actually reflections on Pascal. But he said this. He said, we sinned for no reason but an incomprehensible lack of love. And he saved us for no reason but an incomprehensible excess of love. I cannot say it better than that. Why do I walk away from him? Is because I love the wrong things. Why do I go to him? Is because in spite of that, he still loves me. In spite of that. In spite of that. The question today isn't, are you a type of soil? You are. You are. The question is, which type? Friends, are you just too distracted that you couldn't hear the voice of God if he was talking to you right now? You're one of the soils. Are you the type of person that in spite of what people are trying to relay to you, you shut them down? The first, even at the mention of the name of Jesus, like, I'm done. That's a heart. That's a heart. It's not a question of do you have one. It's which one? Which one? I want to spend just a moment of time, and I want to lead us in a time of prayer. Because what is true, by the way, in this parable, frankly, I find is true of me even in my faith at times. There are times I do not want to hear what Jesus is telling me. I don't. Frankly, because I don't want to change. That's just being honest. How about you, though? How about you? What type of soil are you? What are the things that Jesus is saying to you? A couple of things I want you to consider this morning. You know, we're going to close in a moment with a song. And after that, in Guest Central, just right here at the back of the worship center, we have staff that is there to meet with you. And we're happy to meet with you for a number of reasons. One, what we believe is that every person that has given their life to Jesus is supposed to be in a church, serving in a church, and making an impact in the community through a church. We would love to talk with you about that. We started Discover Woodridge today. Awesome class of people. The future is bright at Woodridge. We would love to talk with you about that. But maybe what you're saying is, you know what, today I came in here and I was looking for something. I was looking for something. For some of us, we take a hard look at the choices that we're making, but then we see the consequences of it. And we ask this other question, what kind of a heart would make those kinds of choices? And the answer Jesus is giving is a heart that needs to change. A heart that needs to change. Values that need to change. And what he says is, and this is a promise of his word, when you choose him, he gives you a new life, a new heart, a new direction. We want to pray with you, to guide with you, to guide you, to lead you, to walk alongside you. There is nothing more important than what we do in a given week, that you would know Christ fully and become a fully devoted follower of his.
We hope you have enjoyed the podcast. For more information about our church, visit www.woodridge.org.